Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today, we are into some John in A Storm of Swords. Matt, I gotta be honest, I didn't have the doc pulled up. Kind of an idiot, I'm sorry.
Hey, that is okay, man. You know, I'm all over the place here with the technical difficulties because Kindle, Amazon just switched the Kindle thing. I can no longer use Kindle Classic. Apparently, you can now no longer download books or something.
You do not own your digital books anymore. That is correct.
Well, I'm gonna have to buy a physical set because I'm sick of it.
Yeah, dude. I went from being one of those people that used to laugh at people who had Blu-rays on their shelves. I'd be like, dude, like, what are you doing? And now I'm like, oh, I get it. So you got to admit when you're wrong, and I was wrong. Physical media is super important.
I think it'll make a comeback. There, I actually read something a while back that. Some company is working on a better version of, say, Blu-ray, which would be like 100 gigs or something like that. Yeah, I think it will. I think it's just one of those things where right now it's like nobody really wants to invest hardcore into it. But I think eventually, you know, if it was cheaper to do or something, then you will. I mean, I'll tell you this, if we start seeing data caps in this country again, I think you'll see physical media because you'll see streamers and all this other stuff. People would be like, well, I'm not watching it because I don't want to get hit with data charges. So then
that's
the back and forth, right? Is streaming and stuff like that. I mean, I've had unlimited data on my phone forever, but I remember a time when I didn't and it sucked.
Well, I bought the the final box set they did of Game of Thrones, which is sick. It has like the Hand of the Kingpin and it's like made of wood and it has like all these different scenes. And I bought that intentionally just to be like, I know I have this because sometimes they go back and they edit things and whatever. Sometimes it's good editing. Sometimes I don't care for it. But like I just wanted to have like those copies of the first eight or all eight seasons. But from the publishing side of things, it's been a minute since I've looked at the stats, but as of like last year, maybe the year before, physical books were actually on the rise and ebooks had just stagnated. So people were actually buying more physical books than before. So the trend, what we thought would be going towards digital books, did not happen. And I'm sure there's a plethora of reasons for that. I think part of it was COVID, actually. I think that people wanted to have books that they could pick up off their shelves. And also, I think that there's a little bit of desire from people who read a lot to disconnect from the internet a bit, get away from the screen. I know that's me. You know, I code all day. And whenever I'm done coding, the last thing I want to do is even look at a Kindle. Like, I want to actually hold a different book in my hand. And I'm also really big on the fact that each book feels different in your hand, which kind of feels like a new experience. I know that's a kind of a weird association, but in the Kindle, everything's just the same, right? Like you could change the font or whatever, but it's still holding that Kindle. So there's almost like a kind of a freshness to picking up like a different copy of A Song of Ice and Fire, because I have like six sets of the books at this point. Sometimes I grab my mass market paperback. Sometimes I grab the new trade. Sometimes I grab my folio. Sometimes I read my sub press, like, which, by the way, is completely outrageous, and I should not have that many copies, but I am who I am. I have at least it's not drugs. That's what I always say. At least it's not drugs.
Hey, nothing wrong with it. Well, I'm in the same boat. You know, I got comics back there, and I got video games and stuff back there too. And sometimes it's nice. I just like having the physical thing, man.
Oh, dude, you know? Sitting down with the World of Ice and Fire to coffee table book. Oh, yeah. Every now and then, I would just pour a little whiskey, and I'll just like drink, and I'll just pick a section. Be like, let's read about the Long Night tonight. And that is the most underrated book in the series, because people treat it as if it's a picture book, but there's a lot of really, I mean, we
absolutely love it. And so even the, I don't have it over there and I can't grab it. I have the Rise of the Dragon, which is, which is Fire and Blood, but it's the same type of a thing. Yeah. It's great.
With wonderful illustrations. Sometimes it's great to just sit down with a book that feels monumental because of how big it is. The quality is really nice as well, which is cool, right? So, yeah, I don't know. I'm on the physical media train again, Matt. I've even been thinking about buying some of my favorite games in physical media just to have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love it. I got the Nintendo Switch. I got like a huge, you know, because I have a gaming channel and stuff like that. I got like a pretty extensive Nintendo Switch library. And
hey, there's a new trailer for the Game of Thrones game, right?
Hey, yeah, let's dive into that. I got that pulled up here too. Let's how do I, 1 second here, right here. Okay, yeah, so it's more so just, it's just showing a little bit of gameplay footage. And I remember last time we did this, you know, it was kind of disaster because there wasn't a whole lot going on in it.
Well, it's also a lot of audio listeners and are like, it's, I can't see the trailer.
Right, it is a lot of audio listeners, but to me the cool thing about this trailer, so it's the Game of Thrones King's Road, is that mobile game we've been talking about, but it's official creatures trailer. And so we actually get, you know, I mean, this is an official game. And to me, the one that's really cool is actually this next one. And it's like a griffin. Unicorns.
Stormhorn unicorn.
Right. But, I mean, first of all, look how huge the thing is. I mean, it's like...
This is like Monster Hunter kind
of. Yeah, the gameplay does look very Monster Hunter-y. But I guess my thing is that... You know, like some of these creatures we've only heard about, even in the books and stuff like that. So clearly somebody somewhere said, hey, and here's an ice spider. I mean, things, again,
I like the ice spider.
It's pretty massive. And so I think it's just kind of cool to see that clearly, you know, Warner Brothers or whoever, or George hasn't really spoken about this game.
Yeah, but this feels very HBO heavy. George mentions everything. Like he mentions the calendars,
and he's never once talked about this game.
I wonder if he's not getting paid for it, and he's like, screw this.
Yeah, I don't know. And so, but it's just kind of cool. So, I mean, clearly somebody somewhere met with. I mean, I don't know if HBO just said, "Yeah, just do whatever you want." Right, because I don't know that George, where the rights lie. I would have to imagine that this is ultimately Warner Brothers who they go through.
I'm thinking that is correct.
Because, you know, the way like the licensing, like Spider-Man, Spider-Man, for example, has like very weird licensing laws because, you know, back in the 90s when Marvel wasn't this big, huge, mega thing it is today, and it was owned, you know, it wasn't owned by Disney, it was its own independent company. They were having money troubles. So they said, all right, we need to sell the rights to some of our things in order to fund our company. And so they gave Fox like the X-Men and Deadpool and some of these things in the gate, and Sony bought the rights to Spider-Man. And since then, Sony still owns the rights to Spider-Man, but it's only for like movies, TV, and video games. So like the actual comics side of it and things like that, Disney, who now owns the rest of Marvel, still has, but Sony still owns the rights to it. So I'm wondering if maybe that's the case.
It could be.
Because George has never said anything about it, but I think it's kind of cool to see some of these creatures. And the one that really stood out was this unicorn, because, you know, we've never, even in the World of Ice and Fire, I don't think there's like an official picture of it.
I have
that
to
might
look.
Be that might be Skagosi.
It might be Skagosi, or because that's just what we're random supposed to see that they put in the game.
It could be. It very well could be. But it looks like it fits very well in the universe.
Damn, man.
It also makes you think, I wonder if we'll see direwolves in here, and if the direwolves are as big as they're supposed to be.
I am just curious who made the decision to make it like an action RPG. It's really just an action adventure game. It's not even an RPG, sure, from what I can tell. Because it is a little weird, because we know that character development, storytelling is like what people like Game of Thrones for. I mean, there's definitely a ton of people who like the action as well. But you would imagine a game would be more akin to a Skyrim or a Kingdom Come,
sure,
type deal, you know? So it's kind of weird that it went this way, but I don't even think
like a Dragon Age or something.
Yeah, I don't think it looks bad. I think it looks kind of cool. So me and Matt will definitely play and let you guys know. For those who have no interest in playing a video game, we will let you know if it is, you know, dog water or not.
Yeah, I think it looks pretty cool. We're just seeing more about it. But again, yeah, so for those of you guys who are listening, go check it out. Game of Thrones, King's Road, official creatures trailer. It's just kind of cool because this is all stuff we've wanted to see, right? We've wanted to see some of these things, and now we're at least getting it in some sort of media. Mm-hmm. Since we didn't get a lot of the stuff in the show, or you know, any of this, or like House of the Dragon or these other stuff, so it's just kind of cool. It's expanding the lore of a Song of Ice and Fire, even if it's doing it in a not particularly canon route. So all right, hey, with that, let's move over to today's chapter, which is John 6 of A Storm of Swords. John reaches Molestown and warns the population to evacuate. At Castle Black, John learns that Jarman Buckwell and his men have returned with tidings of Mance Raider's army. He discovers that the wildlings have been fainting all along the wall, and groups of Black Brothers have been dispersed to counter them. Maester Aemon also tells him that Jor Mormont was betrayed and killed, and only 12 men have made it back from Craster's Keep, including Giant, Gren, Dwen, Sweet Donal Hill, and Dolorous Edd. Aemon cleans and wraps John's wounds, and Gren tells him that Winterfell has been burned to the ground and that Bran and Rickon Stark are dead at hands of Theon Greyjoy. John tells them that there is some kind of mistake, for he saw a gray direwolf at Queen's Crown, and John wonders if Bran lives on through his direwolf. Now, this chapter is one of the things we've been talking a lot about in the Arya chapters, where it seems like Arya is really kind of our voice of everything that's going on in the Riverlands. Mm-hmm. And Arya is hearing it through other people, and the same thing here. It's so cool to see a lot of this information that we've been reading firsthand accounts about, but now it feels like this is all new information to John because he's been north of the wall, right? So he hasn't seen any of that stuff, so he gets to have his reaction to, you know, all of these events, and he's getting that information. Some of the things that are really cool about this chapter is this is like the prelude to the battle at the wall, which is one of the most underrated moments in the entire series.
Yeah,
right. Even the show. I think the show, I remember this being just as good as the Battle of the Blackwater. Like, I remember thinking this was awesome.
A lot,
like,
of emotional moments for it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you know, we're not there yet. This is the prelude to that, but that's where we're headed. And you know, the difference is we've been gearing up so much for the Red Wedding, which next week will really, the next week is like the final gear up. It feels like, you know, we've been really, really, really getting close, like every week
for months.
Like,
all
right. For months. We're like, okay, when are we going to get there? When are we going to get there? And next week is also, I think, still one more tease, before we get there. Like, I think we're literally at the gate next week. But the same thing here with John is, hey, we've known that the Mance Raider has been going to attack, and now we're really getting close to it.
Yeah, there's a lot in this chapter that's very interesting and kind of lays a lot of the groundwork for the remainder of what we have of John's arc. And I think a bit of a hint at where John's arc is going to be going. I was kind of shocked by some of the stuff that's been repeated in prior chapters being repeated here with a whole new kind of meaning if you look at the way it's being contextualized. And I think that's like some of the most brilliant stuff that George does. And very, very sad. I don't know why. I was kind of struck with emotion when I read the part where John finds out that supposedly all of his family is dead and that they have lost Winterfell and Theon has betrayed them. It definitely affected me, even on however many rereads this has been, because that's such a hard thing for John to have to accept that, you know, he did not go help Rob, right? He did not abandon his watch. He stayed there in earlier, and now he has to kind of sit with the fact that maybe because he wasn't there, all this has happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Dude, this is directly after Catelyn has talked to Rob about his will,
mm-hmm.
about who would take it. And now we're seeing John get the news about Winterfell, and he is kind of the final Stark in his mind, at least for what he knows.
Yeah. And that's one of the saddest things is that John, you know, same thing. And actually, to go down a real rabbit hole here, there is a line in this that really kind of got me thinking about something. Okay. And that is, so in about the middle of this chapter, right, they're talking about, you know, all these different people and stuff like that. So John had bitten his lip in his struggles. He could taste blood mingled with the thick, chalky potion. It was all he could do not to retch it up. Clytus brought a basin of warm water, and Maester Aemon washed the pus and blood from his wound. Gentle as he was, even the lightest touch made John want to scream. The Magnar's men are disciplined, and they have bronze armor, he told them. Talking helped keep his mind off his leg. The Magnar's a lord on Skagos, Noy said. There were Skagosians at Eastwatch when I first came to the wall. I remember hearing talk of them. John was using the word in its older sense. I think Maester Aemon said, not as a family name as a title, it derives from the old tongue. It means lord, John agreed. Stur is a Magnar of some place called Then in the far north of the Frostfangs. He has 100 of his own men and a scorn of raiders who know the gift almost as well as we do. Mance never found the horn, though. That's something. The Horn of Winter. That's what he was digging up for up along the Milk Water. And actually, this kind of goes into another cool little bit here about the Horn of Winter and everything. But the piece I want to pull out from that whole little segment there is, the Magnar is a lord on Skagos, Noy said. There were Skagosians at Eastwatch when I first came to the wall. That kind of got me thinking a little bit about where John's going to be going in the future, like when you get to Winds of Winter and things like that, because, you know, one of the big deals we know is big difference between the show and the books is in the show, the pink letter says, hey, I've got your brother. I've got Rick.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sansa's there. We're in a totally different ball game here because none of that stuff happens in the books in the pink letter. So, I mean, there is, hey, he says I have Mance Rayder and these other people, but Rickon isn't part of that story.
He says Arya as well.
He claims as Arya, which we know he doesn't. So here George is already kind of dropping hints about Skagos and like what's going on there. And hey, there were some at Eastwatch when I first came to the wall, and you know, Eastwatch isn't really manned anymore, but if you look at a map, Eastwatch is like directly south of Hardhome, which again, huge difference between the books and the show is that Hardhome takes place before John dies in the show
and is on screen.
Yeah. One of the things that is going to happen to some degree, and this is actually something I was thinking about this week as I was reading that, you know, Jim, you and I are always talking about, man, that Stannis block is the hardest block of Winds of Winter for like anybody, I think, to conceptualize, because if Stannis loses, it goes one way. Here's another, you know, Sansa's down in the Vale. She's not at Winterfell to bring back an army. You know, there's just so many other moving pieces. But Hardhome is another one of those big pieces of the whole of the whole thing that's going on.
Sure.
And so I think it's more likely that John gets resurrected and says, hey, we need to go to Hardhome because we know Val went up there and some of these other people went up there to bring down this army. So this is my question for you is, would Hardhome, how do you think that's going to go?
Well, Val is the question mark for me. Val is probably one of my favorite mysteries slash like what is going to happen. because she's so intertwined with John. So I'm not sure, but I do feel like it kind of all comes down to the crux of Val. Would you agree with that? Like that she's probably the biggest difference in all of this?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's going to be a reason for John to want to try to go up to Hardhome to save people. And maybe that's actually like where his thing kind of ends, is maybe it is a Euron who goes up there. Because we've talked a lot about like the horns being switched, you know, potentially or something like that. Just be such a cool thing where Euron thinks he has this horn that can control dragons, but in fact he doesn't. And then maybe I think it's possible maybe he learns about something else, and maybe he realizes, he's like, well, there's another ancient horn in legends that could do something with the wall, right?
That's cool.
And he thinks maybe, oh, I could tear down the wall and then I could raise an army of wildlings. But maybe it goes in a different direction and it has something to do with like the White Walkers. And that's how it goes. And maybe Hardhome is where he goes. Because I was kind of thinking about this and I was like, I was kind of got me thinking about Rickon a little bit, because we know Davos goes to Skagos looking for Rickon. Well, what if Rickon maybe isn't at Skagos? Maybe what if they put him at like Eastwatch by the sea? Kind of got me thinking. Ooh. And then maybe John could meet him because maybe they know they're coming to look for him. And then clearly there's Skagosis who hang out by Eastwatch. That's what I kind of pulled to get out of this thing. That would be like what they view as their hiding place.
I could see that. I also will say this.
Because Eastwatch is where you would go if you wanted to go to Hardhome.
I feel like there's a chance that the prologue of Winds of Winter could be Hardhome. Yeah, you know how the prologue's always like a
Yeah,
a
but snippet? I thought, didn't George, isn't there something where George specifically said the prologue was going to be Jane Westerling?
Oh, did he? Okay, fair enough.
I could be wrong, but I
might have forgot about that.
Because the prologue isn't one of the sample chapters. And again, think about how long it's been since those chapters came out now. I mean, let alone George forever. Has said I rewrite. Yeah. Now, I mean, I think I would not, and some people do treat that as canon. I don't. I think you treat it as loose canon.
I mean, at this point, who knows about anything? It's been so long.
Yeah. Or no, excuse me. Let's see. Yeah, Westerling. And he this was years ago, but George confirmed at some event, I'm trying to pull it up here, that Jane Westerling would be the Winds of Winter prologue. But that doesn't mean it is the case anymore.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if we go by what we know, then it's most likely that I'm wrong and that it won't be Hardhome, but it would be kind of cool. It would be kind of neat, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it is a big event that's going to happen. And
Melisandre sees it in the flames. I mean, it's
Hardhome could happen off screen, but it could be an event that causes John to say, hey, we got to take an army up here and go deal with this. And that could maybe be like in the show, we got like John and Daenerys saying, hey, we need to go up here. Cause remember they need to get the white to take it down for Cersei to believe it. I think we could still get some of those things, like a council between all these people before they potentially go to war. I don't know that we're going to like make a trip up north to get a white and then Dany loses a dragon because there is no Night King. So I think that was them wanting
They wanted some action
for sure. Yeah. So, you know, some of those things I think could happen. And that's what we always say. Like some of the events, I think you can look at the show as like a framework with some key points being like, we know Hodor is happening, you know, Bran being king, for as far as we know, as George has everything said, is happening. John having to go north of the wall, I think it's, you know, it's more likely that it's probably Hardhome, because that is an event that hasn't happened yet, and there's obviously circumstances for it that will be different.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it all ties into the pink letter, right? The pink letter and how interesting that is too. And this is one thing about this chapter that's kind of, I don't know, ironic, is that the Boltons are spoken of as heroes of the North almost, right? They've
like your must watch list. Our network is all over the place because T-Mobile helps keep you connected from big cities to your hometown on America's largest 5G network. Switch now, keep your phone, and T-Mobile will pay it off up to $800 per line via prepaid card. Visit your local T-Mobile location. Or learn more at tmobile.com/keepandswitch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit. Service port in 90 plus days. Device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Captured Theon and they're flaying him every inch of his skin to pay for his debt or his sins or whatever. And it's just weird because we know where we leave John at the end of Dance of Dragons. Well, he gets stabbed to death, but is that it is now the Boltons antagonizing Jon Snow and Theon is on his way to a redemption arc. And so it's just weird how these things play out. You know, if this book, if Storm of Swords had just came out, we would be all like, oh, dude, Jon and Theon are going to have a showdown maybe at the end. Like he's going to get away from Bolton. But in all reality, the Boltons are actually the bad people here. And Theon made horrible mistakes. But he actually isn't as bad as people think he is. Like he didn't murder Rickon, right?
Right.
So, and Bran. So there's, I don't know. It's just so in John's mind in this moment, Theon is the ultimate evil almost. And in reality, the people who are supposedly saving Winterfell are the true evil. So just kind of cool to think about.
Yeah. 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 I totally agree with you. And that's, he's another character when you look at his arc, and right now he's like the ghost in Winterfell and he's thinking really, he's like, I think there's a line where in one of those chapters where he says, like, I just pray that I die as Theon, not Reek. So good. Okay. Some other stuff from this chapter. You know, a lot of Donal Noy, who is one of my favorite characters.
That's your boy.
Is not in the show because they gave a lot of his stuff to Tyrion. And there is a line here. This is where he's kind of bringing him up to speed on everything that's going on. For starters, later in this chapter, they actually do talk about, like, I saw Sam. I think it's Gren who says, I saw Sam kill another. Sam the Slayer.
Let's
go. John's like trying to imagine it, but he can't. But you know, there's a lot of cool imagery here too. So as the stars began to fade in the eastern sky, the wall appeared before him, rising above the trees in the morning mists. Moonlight glimmered pale against the ice. He urged the gelding on, following the muddy, slick road until he saw the stone towers and timbered halls of Castle Black, huddled like broken toys beneath a great cliff of ice. By then, the wall glowed pink and purple with the first light of dawn. First of all,
oh boy, here we go. Just
amazing writing by George. Excellent.
I thought we were going to go with the dawn part.
Oh, we are. We're definitely about to go there too. But I just want to, like, it's just it's
great
just,
imagery.
It's George. It's perfection. It's
the goat.
Yeah, it's so good. And that's one of the things I know. I talk about. We talk about that every couple of weeks. But it's just like his writing is just,
yeah.
It's so good.
I he's my favorite fantasy author, bar none. I mean, it's not really all that close for me. He's my favorite. I've read a lot of fantasy. Not that that means anything to anyone else, but for me personally, yeah, it's this kind of description and imagery that he pulls together that always seems to have more than just a static meaning, which I talked about last week with the Hound's Face. He just does it very, very well.
Yeah, but in this chapter, this chapter starts with stars beginning to fade. Not perhaps the same as stars beginning to fall in the eastern sky, right? But then the wall glowed pink and purple with the first light of dawn. So,
oh my God.
Stars beginning to fade. You're thinking,
yeah, starfall, maybe.
Starfall glowing pink with the light of dawn. And, you know, pink and is the
fat pink mast. Yeah.
Is the sigil of House Dane, right?
Yeah. Is House Dane purple or pink? I can't remember.
I think it's pink.
Is it? sigil. Let's look it up. It's like a purple pink.
It's a purplish. It's a light purple.
But he mentions purple here too.
So. Yeah, I have seen. I guess I've seen. I have seen some imagery of it being.
I see this one's pink. Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah,
I think it is. No, I think it is supposed to be purple. But yeah, sometimes it will show up kind of as a pinkish
with the star falling over that sword.
Yeah, depending on which version, but I would say officially it is more of a purple. I don't know.
But purple's in the description, so we're still in business here, Matt.
Right.
And tinfoil is intact.
Well, and it is purple and white, and if you add white to purple, it does create pink. So there you go. Okay. Yeah, continuing on here, there is a cool little line here where they're talking about what's going to happen, and Donald Noy's like, they'll be coming through this gate. Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah, but long before hold the door, there was hold the gate. The most underrated scene in the show. So epic.
It's so good, man. I love a final stand.
And they held the gate.
They damn well did. And they will never be remembered in the history books.
No.
Only the observers to witness these sacrifices.
It is so
good. Epic, dude.
There's some other stuff that's kind of some imagery here. The gate is here. The attack is here. Noy crossed the room. Your leg is drenched in his blood. John looked down dully. It was true. His wound had opened again. An arrow wound. So that is also kind of a get some imagery, get ready, because we know that's what happens to Egret, a wildling arrow. It was not a question. Noy had only one arm, but it was thick with muscle. He slid it under John to help support him. You're white as milk and burning hot besides. I'm taking you to Aemon. There's no time. There are wildlings south of the wall coming up from Queen's Crown to open the gate. How many? Noy half carried John out the door. 120 and well armed for wildlings. Bronze armor, some bits of steel. Says how many men are left. 40, some green boys. The armorer laughed. You know, gods preserve him. Last night in the talking about Sir Winton. Last night in the castle, the thing is, Stout seems to have forgotten that no one's been rushing to remind him. I suppose I'm much a commander as we have now, the meanest of the cripples.
I mean, white as milk, but burning hot on the inside is a little bit close to ice and fire.
Mm-hmm.
A little, yeah, right? Milk is white, so snow.
Yeah.
And he's burning on the inside, kind of like fire. I'm reaching here, but I don't know.
That's okay.
It tickled my brain when I read it.
Yeah. Okay. So it kind of continues on a little bit here. And he's talking about how Corrin Halfhand has died. They talk to Clytus a little bit. Then Maester Aemon is helping him get cleaned. That's where I talked about the Magnar and Skagos. You know, the Horn of Winter is an ancient legend. Does the King of the Wall truly believe that such things exist? They all do, said John. Egret said they opened 100 graves of kings and heroes all over the Valley of the Milkwater, but they never... Who is Egret? Donald Noy asked. A woman of the free folk. How could he explain Egret to them? She's warm and smart and funny, and she can kiss a man or slit his throat. Yeah. Sad.
It is sad. Very, very sad.
Then John says, I will not scream, John told himself when he saw the blade glowing red hot, but he broke that vow as well. Donald Noy held him down when Clytus helped guide the maester's hand. John did not move except to pound his fist against the table again and again. The pain was so huge, he felt small and weak and helpless inside. A child whimpering in the dark. Egret, he thought, when the stench of burning flesh was in his nose and his own shriek echoing in his ears. Egret, I had to. For half a heartbeat, the agony started to ebb, but then the iron touched him once again and he fainted.
Yeah, and there's a part here where Egret tells John, he's thinking about Bastard, right? He's thinking about Bastard this, Bastard that, and he doesn't want to father a bastard. And she says, you know nothing, Jon Snow, which at this point has been used a bazillion times. But in this context, he had just talked to Aemon, who's a Targaryen, right? Mm-hmm. He's thinking about where his loyalties lies. We have all this imagery around him. And I think you know nothing, Jon Snow, here is almost like prophetic in some ways, being like, you don't even know what type of bastard you technically are. Like, you're really not the bastard you think you are, which is kind of a really intense thing if you think about it thematically about identity, which we talk about all the time in A Song of Ice and Fire. But think about this, Matt. Like, let's just say one of us, we find out our parents are not our real parents. We've actually been adopted, right?
Right.
It's been hidden from us our entire lives. This is probably the only like real world thing I can think of that would maybe coincide with this. Our perception of who we are and what our life has been this entire time would be completely different if we had known that information when we were younger, right?
Oh, 100%.
And it's a really powerful thing because like John's entire life has been predicated on being a bastard and trying to right that wrong that he didn't do. He's not wrong for being quote unquote a bastard, but you know nothing, Jon Snow, in this section is almost like saying, John, you have all these scruples and rules for your life, but you don't even know the truth about yourself. So you're creating these rules for yourself based on false knowledge, you know, of what you've been told. It's just a really powerful thing and kind of a little deeper than it might seem with the repetition that George is using. But George always uses repetition for multiple reasons, and it's always really valuable to think about the moment that they're being used.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me pull up this last little bit here, because this ties into what you were saying, and some of this is from the the text you were pulling from. So this is right at the end where John is getting he's drinking the milk of the poppy and everything. Yep. And it is kind of interesting because just like what you were saying, where you're saying, you know, John doesn't realize what kind of bastard he is. He, you know, thinks a lot about his brothers of the Night's Watch. He's thinking about Ygritte. Like, he's being pulled in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. He does also think of Bran in this chapter, which I just want to say.
I got some
the Bran John connection is one that I did the data analytics on it, and it's pretty insane.
I have a point about that, but I'll make it when we get there.
Okay. So let me read the last little bit here. So he's talking about, hey, your brothers died at Winterfell. I'm very sorry, John. Your brothers died at the command of Theon Greyjoy after he took Winterfell in his father's name. When your father's bannermen threatened to retake it, he put the castle to torch. Your brothers were avenged, Gren said. Bolton's son killed all the Ironmen, and it is said he's flaying Theon Greyjoy inch by inch for what he did. I'm sorry, John. Pip squeezed his shoulder. We all are. John never liked Theon, but he had been their father's ward. Another spasm of pain twisted up his leg, and next he knew he was flat on his back again. There's some mistake, he insisted. At Queen's Crown, I saw direwolf, a gray direwolf, gray. It knew me. If Bran was dead, could part of him live on in his wolf? Or Oral lived within his eagle. Drink this. Gren had a cup on his lips. John drank. His head was full of wolves and eagles, the sound of his brother's laughter. The faces above him began to blur and fade. They can't be dead. Theon would never do that. In Winterfell, gray granite, oak and iron, crows wheeling around the tower, steam rising off the hot pools in the godswood, the stone kings sitting on their thrones. How could Winterfell be gone? When the dreams took him, he found himself back home once more, splashing in the hot pools beneath a huge white weirwood that had his father's face. Ygritte was with him, laughing at him, shedding her skins till she was naked as her name day, trying to kiss him. But he couldn't, not with his father watching. He was the blood of Winterfell, a man of the Night's Watch. I will not father a bastard, he told her. I will not. You know nothing, Jon Snow, she whispered, her skin dissolving in the hot water and flesh beneath sloughing off her bones until only skull and skeleton remained. The pool thick and red.
Brutal. Knowing what's coming. So yeah. Brutal foreshadowing here, but there's more foreshadowing than it appears. First off, I just want to say weirwood alert. We've been talking about weirwoods for many chapters now.
And we did that Patreon episode where we dove into like weirwood dreams and stuff like that.
And it's been mentioned in like so many of the chapters that we've been leading into. I mean, the weirwoods are so very, like, we're supposed to be paying attention to this. I mean, this is foreshadowing for John warging into Ghost in Winds of Winter. I think it's very obvious, and it's very subtle foreshadowing, but it shows that John's mind has went here. Like, he thinks in a way of like, what is possible, you know, being a Stark and having these direwolves. Like, he knows that there's more there. And he thinks, well, maybe Bran could live on his wolf, which is exactly what John's going to do in Winds of Winter to keep himself from passing to the afterlife so he can come back to his body from Melisandre, assuming it's Melisandre that brings him back to life, which I think it will be. But right. I mean, Matt, this is thousands of pages before his death. And obviously we haven't actually got John's resurrection or warging into Ghost at all yet. Like, it's been 10 years and we still haven't got it. But when that does, you know, finally come out, it's like, wow, George was foreshadowing this in like 2004 or five, you know, or three when this came out.
Yeah. And that might be an interesting thing to think about too, is maybe that could be the thing that causes John to be more like himself. Is because, like, let's just say for sake of argument that when Barrick comes back or when Lady Stoneheart comes back, right? Like, Lady Stoneheart is very different than Catelyn, but maybe she was passed on and then you're pulling her back from like the afterlife.
Yeah.
As opposed to pulling John essentially kind of back to his body.
That's right. Yeah. And the fact that John is recognizing this shows that it's on his mind. I don't think Catelyn ever thinks anything like this. So I think her experience of being resurrected will be different than John's. I do think that John is still going to be vastly different from the John that we know. Because George has said many times that he's not a fan of resurrection without consequence. So there will be a consequence. Maybe he will be nonverbal. That's one right. of the things that people have kicked around, that you'll never get another John POV once he's resurrected, which I think is a really cool idea, actually.
Yeah.
I think that would be really fascinating. Also, we cut down on George having to write another POV, which probably isn't the worst thing.
Right.
But John and many could be argued to be the main character of the story. I think you can make that, you can make that argument for a lot of the characters. So I'm not standing by that as objective truth. I mean, but he's certainly top three. Right, he's top three characters. I mean, him, Danny, Bran, but
John.
I
think is the number one character.
Probably, I would say that's probable. It's just really hard to argue it, because someone can, you can make a case for almost any of the POVs, right?
For sure,
outside of the ones that have died. Like, I mean,
but I think if you had to, I think if you had to pick the single most, if you had to pick the single character
series is around this guy. Right.
Is Jon Snow. Yeah. I think if you ask everybody who is the one most main character of A Song of Ice and Fire, they'd say Jon.
It's Danny or Jon. Right. It's Danny or Jon for sure. And for me, he's not even my favorite character. I love him. I love all the characters. But I just think that he is so central to the number one reveal in the show, or my God, the show and the books. And it would be hard not to have a POV from him, I guess is what I'm saying. But I expect that his resurrection will be different from Catelyn's in a couple different ways, but still have a detrimental effect on the Jon that we've known and loved.
Right.
You know,
especially if Ghost is there, right? Like, if Ghost is in the room, then I think that could totally, you don't really have to do a lot with it, but if Ghost is just in the room, you could even say something of like Ghost's demeanor changed or something. Where it's literally like, okay, now you're just going from here to here, as opposed to whatever happens to Barrick. And although Barrick doesn't seem as different as Catelyn, like Catelyn is like a very different person.
Oh, definitely. And Barrick has some weird qualities about him, especially from what we've known about Barrick prior. It seems like something's being taken from him every time he's resurrected.
Right.
So John will probably Catelyn might be.
Yeah. Whereas Catelyn might even be the fact that she's given life by somebody who's already fragmented, right?
Yes.
Like, it's kind of a weird comparison, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of like Harry Potter with like the Horcruxes, right? Where it's like each time, what?
I do not know this.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah. So in the listeners do. Okay. That's all. They understand it, right? By creating one, essentially you sort of split your soul or whatever. Anyway, so I'll explain it. So
here's
Voldemort.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. So Voldemort, essentially, you know, there's all these items, and he basically rips part of his soul off and puts it into all of these different items. And every time you do, it's like one of the most terrible, worst things you could ever do. And he does it so that way, the only way to kill him would actually be you have to destroy all of these different items, because his piece of his soul will always linger, and it could maybe find his way back, or you know, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a question.
Have you not read Harry Potter?
I got bored in book four and I just said, meh.
Book four?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
That's like where it's
bro,
like.
Bro, Halo came out. I was done.
You should read it. You have a chance.
I tried to read him as an adult. I couldn't go back, dude. I couldn't do it.
You should.
It was brutal.
The last three. Oh, dude. I read Deathly Hallows in like a day. Blitzed it.
I wish I liked it. I do. I've actively tried to gaslight myself into liking it, and every time I'm like, I hate this so much.
Just start with book four. Don't go back. Just start with book four. Book six and seven is so like up your alley.
I think that the world doesn't need any more Harry Potter fans. I think that you guys are good. Like, you're good. You won. You're fine.
You could honestly probably just read book seven, because like the magic in it and stuff, it's like, it's definitely like way heavier fantasy.
I mean, it's not even that, the fantasy elements really, that
it's just like, the, yeah, that's fine.
I also don't care for her writing that much myself, but
well, I don't really,
they were also not written much for someone who is 34, right, to crack that's them fine open for the first time, right? But here's a question about Ghost. When John leaves Ghost, does Ghost die?
No, I don't think there's any chance that Ghost
that would be dead. Brutal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I just don't think so. God,
that would suck. That would be awful, wouldn't it? I would dislike John for that.
No chance George is killing Ghost.
You don't think so?
No, Ghost is making it through the whole thing.
Okay. I mean, I hope you're right.
Yeah.
Because if not, I'm rioting.
Oh, no. Ghost makes it 100%.
You know, if George never writes the books, all the characters stay alive, which is kind of cool.
Except John.
Except for John.
All right. Anything else on this chapter, Jimmy?
No, not really. I mean, just a lot of foreshadowing and the duty versus love, the heart and struggle with itself, the core of William Faulkner's books, and also George R. Martin's is on full display here. And we're getting ready to watch John pick duty over his heart.
Okay. So you cut out there for a second. Last thing I heard was William Faulkner's books.
William Faulkner's message is always the heart, the human heart at conflict with itself. George agrees with this, and this is this is part of that. And John will pick duty over love, which makes you wonder if later in the series he will pick love over duty, which you could argue he does with the pink letter.
Yeah, and maybe he does with Val.
And maybe he does without. Maybe like he does it with Danny.
John,
who knows?
John Daenerys may never even happen.
I don't think it would. From what we know,
it could just be John and Val.
Yeah, from what we know, it's not supposed to happen in the book. Technically, like they D&D had created the idea of John killing Danny in like season four or three or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think Val could be a big part of the Snow series if we ever see it.
I would like it. I mean, one of the many characters missing from the actual show, which kind of sucks.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, with that, Jimmy says, I've been saying every week for the past couple of weeks, another short chapter. Well, guess what? Next week is not a short chapter, okay? Because we will be into Catelyn 6 of A Storm of Swords, and it's where it's like the final thing for Catelyn, before the final thing. So
I would say, well, we could say we're saying bye to Catelyn, but we will say hello to Lady Stoneheart.
We're not saying bye to Lady Catelyn yet. We're at the gate, but it's next week is actually a big chapter, and a ton of stuff does happen. So we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, chapter 49, Catelyn 6.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
And we'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Like your must-watch list, our network is all over the place. Because T-Mobile helps keep you connected, from big cities to your hometown, on America's largest 5G network. Switch now, keep your phone, and T-Mobile will pay it off up to $800 per line via prepaid card. Visit your local T-Mobile location, or learn more at T-Mobile.com/keep-and-switch. Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit. Service port in 90-plus days. Device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.